some miracle nutrition with Hardy Y. I'm Hardy Y. Join me now, won't you? As we spend a little time together. But we spend it on each other, so we make it back right away. Thank you for spending time with me. Well, hello. My name is Hardy White, and I'm on the radio today because I won a contest. I had applied for this contest, the prize of which was to be on the radio, and I have always wanted to be on the radio. Why? I don't know. If you ask people in certain professions, they'll say the same thing. Why are you a doctor? I always wanted to be a doctor. Why? I don't know, but I'm afraid if I question it too closely, it will dissuade me from my goal, and I am laser-focused, hyper-focused on it. Same here. I've always wanted to be on the radio, and I think the fact that I don't have a reason is probably good. Imagine my reason was, I want to spread my poisonous ideas that I came up with because I'm very angry. I'm not so angry. Now, when I started to broadcast, I thought, what should I do? I mean, you can really do anything on the radio, but you can't. So I thought, first of all, not everything has to be funny. It really doesn't. I've been to a lot of very good funerals or memorial services. You say, well, a lot of times putting a little humor in it, you don't have to. It can be really good without it. Same with a cocktail party. You don't have to tell jokes. There's other things that can happen at it. And so you don't have to be funny. You don't have to be informative. Now, a lot of times today, I say I'm so busy. And if I do a thing, I'm also a pragmatist. I'm a pragmatist because I'm a nihilist. I'm empty. So I have to, everything I do is just for my survival, and including my edification. So if I have downtime, I need to fill it with some sort of class. Are you going to educate me? No, I'm so sorry. Are you going to enlighten me? Like, are you going to give me special insight into politics or the human mind? No, no, that almost is a subset of educating you. I don't know. I can't do that. A lot of it, some of it's philosophical reasons, mostly intellectual. I don't have the capacity. I wish I did. Oh, my goodness. I'm one of those folks that would like to have a profession that requires a very sound intellect. And yet, what a tragedy that I don't have it. So maybe you didn't try hard enough. Oh, I don't know. You don't know me. I feel like I'm trying. And I wouldn't choose to, like, struggle making your change in a retail situation. I'm glad we moved to credit cards. I was like, oh, counting. I can't. I just would freeze sometimes. Someone said, where's my change? Count it back to me backwards.
Oh, 5 is 10, 10 is 21, 3 is 60, 5 is...
Oh, it was so confusing. So I have to do math. Now I have to do it backwards. So I can't help you there. And I don't tell stories because of my attention span. I can't seem to get to the end of them. I meander. And I'm like that way in a lot of things. It's if I go to Disney World, let's say, and I go in one of the stores, I'm done. I stay there all day. I don't know to move on. Because I find, there's an infinite amount of things to do and experience here. I go, sir, that's the restroom. Still, look at the art. There's the restrooms near my, there's just like a state park where you go walking and see wildlife. And there's bathrooms there. They have to have them. And they have a little, you know, where the ranger sits all day or something and asks questions. I say ask because I ask them a question one time. They say, I have no idea. What do you think? But in the bathroom, they have these plaques that have fun facts about different animals. A lot of times having to do with their scat. because it's in the bathroom. It took me a while to figure out why that was the theme. I was like, why are they talking about rodents' poo? And it's because you're in the potty too. And just because I wasn't pooing, because you're standing, I think they're at the eye level of the, I don't mean to be crude, eye level at the urinal. And it's funny if it, like, it started at eye level in the urinal, and then you finish it by looking down, the rest of it's on the urinal cake. So just the eye, and we're trained to do that from the internet. I like when a YouTube ad says, don't, before you scroll away, I think there's nowhere to scroll. I'm here to look at that part. I think you probably made this thinking it was going to be on Facebook or something. And perhaps I have designed my show. I haven't designed anything. Not to be like, radio, for radio, the immediacy of radio. And I know that they keep archives and everything, but I also like the vanishing quality of it. Things online seem so permanent, like, oh, there it goes. It's there forever. And radio always seemed like, there it goes. It's floating off in space, chasing I Love Lucy episodes to the distant stars. And that's what I always thought would be good. Oh, I would like the bulk of my work to go merely poorly remembered. That there's any kind of, so I can go back and hear what you literally said. I go, I do not know that it will contain the magic that it did when it was just put out there the first time. I always think that about storytelling and everything. It's wonderful. Are you against the written word? Well, I don't say it publicly. I think written language is great for like receipts or tombstones. But as far as conveying any kind of information, I don't know. You just see something written down. How do you know what they mean? You know how it is. You can be speaking the same language and there'd be different meaning or something. You're overhearing my friends talking and say, oh, are you talking about shoes? And you go, no, that's code for weed or something. You don't know. So you can get the toe. You think you're speaking the same language, but it could be completely different. And I think we're speaking codes even we ourselves don't understand. But you're saying things. I know that there's things in my speech that I don't intend. Did someone put them there? Hidden meanings? Does that not mean what I think it means? That happens all the time. Oh, I'm always unintentionally embarrassed. So I'm sorry, my naivete. Maybe I'll even say naivete wrong. My naivety, or something like my nativity, in my well-meaning nativity. I said something wrong or pronounced it wrong. And now I'm the fool. I'm the idiot. And one thing about the quick exchange of information is nowadays people are all sorts of people available to tell you that you're an idiot or you're bad or wrong or you're boring or you're not funny or you're too funny or you're this, that, and the other thing. Now, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Because what I like to do is at the end of everything, I give myself notes. I go, what would I do if this happened again? And then I think, well, it won't happen again, so I needn't take any notes. If you're only going to, I think all sitcoms should be like that. One episode only, and it's not the pilot. You make the pilot in private, and then a couple, two, three episodes in private. We all see the fourth episode, and then you disappear. I think that's the way to do it. They used to call them short films, but now I don't know. I'm not... responsible for making, listen, I don't purport to know anything about any medium. And I know as much about it as anyone who's merely listened. If you turn on the radio, I've watched a doctor. That's how much of a doctor I am. I've seen movies. That's how much of an actor I am. I've been trained in nothing. That's not true. I'll go through and I'll give you my high school, what do you call it? Transcript. I was going to say my CV, my curriculum vitae, sir. And you see all the courses I took. So one of them, Americanism versus Communism. So I'm pretty sure I'm well-versed in that. And other things. I believe I took some mathematics courses and they do not reflect my actual knowledge, though. Isn't that strange? It's less than, it looks better on paper than it is. Say, oh, we got a D in algebra. He must know a little bit. No. Isn't that something? I think that was just a pity D. So I can't bring myself to fail you because you're so funny in class.
Thank you.
That happens, I bet. But really, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting, and apparently, I taste like water or something. Or standing water. I don't even know. You tell me what my pudding... I'm going to say it's pudding. What do you think it is? Take a taste.
I can't be sure.
Have some more.
I don't want to have a lot of it if I don't know what it is.
Trust me.
Oh, nowadays.
Nowadays, any days. Never trust somebody, even thousands of years ago, if somebody said, hey, stranger, taste my pudding. That's a red flag. When they were carrying red flags, that's where that come from, is the pudding pusher, the red flag pudding pusher. This goes back many, many, many years. And in Asian art, you'll see it in Japan, you'll see it as the tofu boy, that yokai who's about to lick a plate of tofu. That's a good one. And we have monsters in our culture. What's your culture? Not sure. No, I'm soaking in it. Palm olive, I guess. My culture is, I guess, 70s television advertisements have been stunted by it, addled by it, derailed from participation in any kind of meaningful existence by it. Thrown into a worldview that is distorted and strange. I guess they didn't think children were watching television when they did all these things. So, oh, kids won't be watching. And if they are, they won't be influenced by it. No, they won't be influenced by it. No, no. Speaking of which, what can we do to influence the children to buy these toys? Well, we're talking to some psychologists and advertisers. Really? Yes, yes, and they say any subliminal suggestion right up to telling them to do it. Oh, all right, well, that's a wide range that we have there. Yes, we could put hidden pictures of naked ladies in ice cubes, and that'll persuade people to do it. And then if we tell them literally to do something, we just deny that that happened and that people are not that impressionable. There, but then we got them. So what happens, I think, that my allegiance and my attention was gotten, had, or captured by 1970s advertising firms for a very short-term purpose. So like maybe only selling me a certain kind of pen. And then once that pen is, they move on and they've been forgotten and then I've devoted my life to the pen. I think that's happened. That's probably happened over and over again. Has it? Are you really that impressionable? That impressionable? That's all my brain is. Maybe it's probably different for most people, but I believe that I came into this world a tabula rasa, sort of. You could only write certain things on the tabula, mind you. I mean, you can't, you know, you're kind of wired to do certain things and not others, but other than that, it seemed to be wide open. And I think if I had been born in any other place in the earth to other people, I would have a different language and a different culture, don't you think? Maybe different values. Maybe I'd have the same predisposition because of my sun sign. Who knows? I don't know. But it feels to me like maybe I'd be a slightly different person. And you know how the conditions of your life can define you. People have traumatic experiences and everything. We're all different. There is no universal experience, really. And you can have universal. Go to church, you all have the same story there. Or you all watch the same advertisements or cartoons and you have the same story. And then they become your mythology. Isn't that nice? So instead it's all replaced. So whereas somebody like Milton, when he's writing Paradise Lost and adding on, right, he's like, I'm going to write a prequel to the Bible. It's very ambitious. So I'm going to write the untold story. I'm going to write a little bit. Is it a prequel? Is it it's an equal? I don't know what it is, like the Book of Dust. And so I'm going to write something like that. And I'm going to sort of go back to, you know, Greek myth. And put that in there too. And I know that well. So when there's a battle in heaven between the angels and God, I will model that on the Titanomachia, the attack of the Titans. And then I'll put that in there. And then years from now, people will confuse Paradise Lost with the Bible. And that'll all be all mixed up in there. And I'm thinking, in the future, someone will write a prequel to the Bible that will include perhaps the Flintstones. I don't know. As the Flintstones as the first people. And you could make a good argument. I saw one recently where Fred and Barney, who are solid friends, they experienced jealousy, and Fred wanted to win these awards so badly. I know these are all probably ripoffs of Honeymooners, and I've been watching the Honeymooners too. But if you show a child just an Elvis impersonator and not Elvis, you can't blame them for becoming a fan of the Elvis impersonator. And so Fred wanted to win so badly that he wanted to team up with the best athlete in the lodge and jettison his friend and buddy, and I don't, maybe more, Barney. And Barney is enraged and hits him. And so Fred has to put a raw steak over his eye. Man, that's a lot. That's a lot. You know, a child sees that and goes, man, that's a lot. I know it's funny. And the people make it, I guess they're thinking, it's a cartoon, and it's supposed to be on prime time, it's for adults or something. And so how's that going to damage a child? And doesn't the Three Stooges? I don't know. The Three Stooges, I feel like there's sort of an old school, I don't know if you've read any Yiddish anarchist newspapers, from the early 20th century.
No, I don't think so.
Anyway, I could talk about that, how that relates to the Three Stooges and class and all that kind of stuff. But I won't. Isn't it more pertinent to the Marx Brothers? I don't know, man. I mean, somebody's the Addams Family expert, somebody's the Munsters expert. You know, they all have a place in this world, I think. And I know that, it's funny, too, they teach things in college, too. It's so far in your head. Once you've got that in you, and then you're a college professor, and you think, I'm going to teach a course about television and television shows I like and things like that. Because, really, that's the new mythology. Everybody knows. Then it gets into the curriculum. And then, as we know, what happens in curriculum and academia, it fails to move forward, and it thinks, look like avant-garde art. What's the most, nothing's been more progressive than 1913. And then they teach that forever as the most forward-thinking moment ever, and then we're all working towards that. That's what avant-garde art is. This is what radio is. Why can't radio, I'm choking to death. I want you to hear me cough in this era of hacking up one's lungs and choking to death. It's just part of life. So, oh, there's a cough button. I'm not going to hide things from you. Well, I'm going to mute my heart. Every time I tear up, I'll press a button too. I want you to hear my voice choke out if I'm sad. I want you to hear everything. Well, I don't want to hear it. You have an off button. That's special. We're not driving in a car together, whereas, like, if we were literally in the car together, okay, I couldn't, granted, you could not jump out of the moving car. But since I'm not literally there, you can turn the dial. If you're home and you're listening to me and don't want to, oh my goodness, stay tuned for at least 60 more seconds when I give you some ideas of what you can do. And it's all sorts of things. Oh my goodness. Don't read a book. And think about why. Think about what is that book about? Why were they writing that things down and not telling me? Well, they couldn't tell you. and they wanted to share their story. With whom? I mean, why? I don't understand. I'm not trying to be obtuse. I just really, maybe I overthink things. But, you know, I always think, you know, but people, if you ask somebody, are you doing this for its own sake? Or are you thinking of the audience? Or you want a reaction? And a lot of times people just can't, whatever the answer is, I'm pretty sure nobody's going to be honest with themselves. It just doesn't, it's not conducive to clear thinking, artistic expression. You know, it's like, don't make me think about it too much. Then I won't, you know, it's utter uselessness. And that's because that's your life. Same thing. Same futility. Same thing. If you look at it out of more than just the side of your eyes, the corner of your eyes, you can't see it. So I keep looking for purpose in my life, Hardy. And it always seems to be in my peripheral vision. And when I go to look at it, it's not there anymore. And I say, that's because it's floating on the surface of your eyeball. What's that a metaphor for? It isn't. I don't know what we're talking about. I forget. But yes, sometimes you try to look for it. Well, it's not there, probably. Or it's there, but it's only ever in the corner of your eye. There's no, you know, I don't know, it's purpose, non-purpose. Can something be and not be at the same time? That's for physicists to, I don't even try to delve into that. Why don't you talk about black holes? I don't know much about them. Two, I'm not sure if someone's home and they're sad, that's really what is going to do it. It's like, what's that have to do with me? Oh, isn't it compelling? I don't need to be compelled. I need to be consoled, or I just need to hear another heart. Oh, that's what I try to do, is present you another heart. You know, probably, I don't know, 17th century? I get things mixed up. 16-something, I think. In Holland, they would go to autopsies for fun. And you'd go, and you say, I have tickets to, they're cutting someone open. And, wow, who's going to do it? These guys that look like they're on a cigar box are going to cut someone open. Oh, it's fantastic. Let's go. And so they'd all go and watch, and they say, we are learning. We're learning something about the human. Ew! Oh, man, look, ew! But I feel like that sometimes. I don't mind peeling myself open and say, hey, let's take a look at what's inside of me. And it's not, you know, aesthetically pleasing. It's just true. As a human being, my urge to communicate with you, my constant questioning about why that is, my need for acceptance, my fear of rejection, and my denial of death all conspire to make me just like you. Not just like you. Or maybe not like you at all. But you do recognize me as being human. So that's probably not. So I'm gonna embarrass anybody, but somebody said something hurtful to me, and they said, I'm sorry, I didn't know that you were real. And I thought, well, that could be. You know, nowadays, the artificial, sometimes I want to see a Vocaloid in a live kabuki play. Say, how is that possible? Well, you know how it's possible. It was a rear projection. What do you mean? I mean, it was projected out of the kabuki actor's rear. No, it was on the rear projection. It was a screen, so the traditional kabuki actor was standing in front of the screen. And then the Vocaloid, she was in it too, and she's not in the original play. And look who's here. You know, Popeye is suddenly in Romeo and Juliet or something. But she just pops up and sings along with the lead kabuki actor. And they sang a kind of a quasi-nationalistic Japanese song that I was trying to ignore the lyrics of, and it was wonderful, but she wasn't real. But the actor wasn't really, I mean, he was a real person. He's just playing a part. He wasn't really a general, ancient general or anything. He was a person. So there you go. So one of them was not real. But I wasn't moved to say anything hurtful to the not real, to the Vocaloid. And, you know, and I honored her gender preference, which was she. So I don't even say, well, it's not even a, okay, I'm going to go along with it. But that's because anything that seems alive sometimes is alive to me. I was terrible that way with stuffed animals when I was a child. Now I realize that a lot of things, just because they look alive, do not necessarily have souls. And I was fine with that until I learned that sometimes if an object reaches its 100th birthday, it can become an animated, like a yokai, an animated little monster thing, and just mischievous. And I'm worried because I have some of my grandfather's old tools, and I don't know when he got them. And we're creeping up on what could be the 1920s, and that's very possible. So if he had, there's a rubber mallet around here that looks in rough shape, and I'm thinking, oh, 30s or 40s, but what if it's earlier? And if that thing comes to life, it starts throwing itself around the room, I don't know what to do. I can't tell you. So, I worry about things. And I worry about, am I real? Yes, I'm pretty sure. Yes. No. No. I don't know. I don't know. Let me tell you something. If you're having a discussion with your friends, sometimes you're sitting around and say, let's play a two-handed card game. And go, oh, there aren't a lot. Well, how about German whist? That's just trick-taking. Yeah, but it has two stages at least. Or piquette, which I prefer. You're sitting around and say, as you're playing cards, you start talking about consciousness. And it's a very, you know, it's a very interesting thing to talk and think about. And I would like to say, if you're having this thought, say, I'm pretty sure my own consciousness, I can't be sure of someone else's. I don't have any proof, really, at the end of the day, or the beginning of the day, or any time during the day. Also time. But I would just like to say this to you. I'm pretty sure I don't have it. Because a lot of times, for other things, if I take a test or something, I don't have what others have, and I'm thinking maybe I don't, maybe I'm also not conscious. And you'll see that I've been in situations where I was treated like that. I think, you know, I had a delivery job one time for a florist, and the owner treated me like I was not a conscious being, which was fine. I have my doubts. But I don't mean to get all Shylock, but I do. I think if you cut me, I bleed and all. I've not cut myself in quite a while, knock on wood. Ah, there's a splitter. But I haven't in a while, but I'm pretty sure if you still cut me, I bleed. And what's the other? Tickle me and I laugh. You've cooled my friends and heated my enemies. That's a different part of it. What is it? Oh, I don't know. I don't remember it all. But I believe, yes, that I have feelings. Now, my feelings probably don't matter because they're not in your head. And, boy, I have a hard time. Sometimes if I hurt a person, I do have a difficult time with it. And that could be a weakness or positive. It's just a thing. And so because of that, it's often hard for me to do anything sort of assertive. You know, I don't feel passive as much as I feel like I got a lesson in consequences and connections, and it was very interesting to me. And I tried to become quieter in my what I did. I tried to make fewer consequences. I felt like if I moved through life as if I were walking on rice paper, if I was trying not to leave any footprints, if I was trying to walk silently through the forest, to glide. But, oh, and you can do this. You can integrate all that wonderful Taoist philosophy, and you can find a some sort of Tai Chi class or something, and you can learn to walk in such a way that you could walk on the rim of a barrel or something. How about that? Yeah, without falling in, you could just walk if you needed to do that. If you were in a fight and you were all standing on wine vats, that could happen. Here, I've gone to a tour of a distillery here in Kentucky. And at the Woodford Reserve one, their mash is all open, you know, in those giant barrel things, you know. And you could walk on the edges of the staves like that. Can you imagine that, doing your kung fu? And if you fell, you would fall into this yeast vat and I guess be made into whiskey. And they'd put out a special edition, you know, you flavored. You can get a relative. We'll throw a relative of yours into the vat. And then if you buy, you know, so and so many barrels, you get that. You get your relative has been, what do you call it? You soak them like that. There's a word, steeped. That's it. Family steeped, person steeped whiskey. And, well, you have burnt wood in there. Why not throw human remains? And we don't know largely is what's in a lot of beverages, do we? I guess we do. Some we do. A lot of times it's something ordinary. Now, at the very beginning of the show, I said that. You don't have to be funny. You don't have to be enlightening or special or whatever to give joy. Sometimes you just have to have it's just a low level of comfort or somewhat satisfying a need. And all this might be true of the banana. Yeah, the banana, how I say it's only, sometimes it's funny. It's capable of being funny, but in a tiresome way, maybe. It does give joy. If you're hungry, it gives joy. Sometimes it's just the perfect thing. So I'm on this diet, and I don't, but a banana I could have. And I need potassium because I'm crampy, right? I'm muscle crampy. And what better thing than the banana? Banana, I said. Why did I put it in? And yeah, I like it there, banana or banana, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what you call it in your language. Banana might be your code for weed. Like I said, we might be everything is, he's saying banana like he doesn't know what it means. I don't know what anything means. And that's why a mass communication is not possible. Only conversation where we can maybe come to an agreement about what we're saying, what it means, if we're not trying to best one another. If it's adversarial, we'll never communicate. You can absolutely keep someone from getting through to you. And you can absolutely keep them from understanding what you're saying. And it's very easy to do that. Because unless you're cooperating, you're not going to, words don't work that way. They don't automatically get in your head and do things necessarily. So I want to thank you if you've ever let mine in your head, and I will assure you that they are biodegradable. I don't want them to stick necessarily. I guess they do. They stick more in yours sometimes. People go, Hardy, I remember when you said, and I was like, oh dear, I don't remember saying that. That sounds great, but I wonder if it's true, because I really don't remember saying it. Therefore, I don't remember the rationale. But hopefully, you know, sometimes if you say the right thing, I have a friend who helps people die. And so people, I have a couple friends that do that. So they ask, you know, what do you say? Do you contradict? I say, you're not going to heaven. No, you just tell them whatever they, you know, they lead the way. Your comfort is not about correcting them sometimes. There's a time and a place for everything. But you know, when the struggle is its most struggly, and I can't imagine something more struggly than facing your own mortality, the end of the world as you know it. At that time, you need some comfort. But what if you had that more than just then, right? I don't know. What if it was a way that we could open our hearts all, most of the time?
That's not possible. The nature of people is,
I'm always afraid when somebody tells me, when I'm with somebody and they say, you know, the nature of people is cruelty and deceit. And you think, ooh, like, what are you basing that on? Because it seems to me, if you weren't cruel and deceitful, you'd say, well, you know, I'm not sure what the nature of people is, because I see a lot of people acting one way, but I feel another way in my heart. So I worry. I say, oh my goodness, they're all surrounded by it, by the palmolive of the expectation of cruelty and deceit. You just keep waiting for it. And that's a horrible way to live. You know, you fluctuate between fear and anger and madness when you're afraid of your fellow human beings. There's no rest. There's no way to rest. Imagine a village that's set up on a hill, and they live there, and they're all content, and you say, oh, they, you know, that won't last for long, and it doesn't, and these other, some bad folks come over the hill, and they pillage this little village or whatever, and things can never be the same for the pillaged, can they? Now they'll live in fear. It could happen once, it could happen again, you know. How do you change it then? What now, Hardy? How do you do it once you've been... What are you saying? I'm not saying anything. I'm saying, oh my goodness. I don't know what to do. I can't fully go into expect to be attacked mode. I guess I'm a village rebuilder. And it seems absurd. And it seems futile. And I think that we already decided that everything was futile. So, in which case, I prefer joyful futility to angry futility. Or fearful futility. Oh, my friends, let's just make it up. I'm glad to be with you. I hope you're all right. Oh, I know what a struggle it is. Isn't it? It's something else. And say, oh, I wish my life had gone differently. Oh, I know. I know, I do too, sometimes. But then I think about how much of it I don't remember. And I think, well, maybe it did go differently. And I just don't remember it. So there's that. Oh, my goodness. Just being here and holding your hand sometimes is enough. Or, you know, giving somebody who you sound like me, Hardy, the way that I can't really hold a thought. I get lots of compliments like that. You know, I also, people don't find me funny either. Hardy, I can relate. And I go, oh dear. But that's okay. Whatever. So I'm also homely like you, sir. Much love. Much love. And I'm fine with those gifts. It takes me, I'm also, you know, selfish and sensitive and fearful. I've not banished any of those things. Not by a long shot. It's like a, you know, if you've decided to become kind of a neat freak or something, you say, I'm going to clean my house. You don't just clean it the once. You know, you decide your house still gets dirty. You just clean it. You change your values to doing something about it. So I stay as petty and selfish and confused and fearful and sad as I've always been. But now I tried to do something, to face it. You know, to do something about it, to not, when I can, you know, and some things I can do things about, and others I cannot. And so I depend on my friends, and I humble myself, because I don't want to, you know, if a barn needs to be built, then to heck with my pride, you know, I'm going to ask for help. And sometimes the outcome is more important than how you look. You can't always get credit for something. If you want it to happen, there's a difference. And I think a lot of times we want credit for things instead of just them happening. So is there, you know, a wish? I wish that this happened, or I wish to let everybody know that I caused it to happen. Well, that's interesting. So I don't know. I don't know where I am on that. You know, I'm also... I question my motives to do things. So you're just a show off. Probably am. I don't know. That's why I try to self-sabotage a little bit. So I don't want to be a... I want to be a... If I am a show off, I want to have everybody witness the my comeuppance immediately in real time. If I'm a fool, I want it, everybody, I want us to learn about it together. And I think it'd be better. Better for my heart. Oh, gosh. Some of you, a lot of you, probably most of you, have faced some things that are incredibly difficult and for which no one has really recognized your strength. And that's because we're all ignoring those things. Do you understand? We're all too weak to acknowledge that. It's overwhelming. It can be overwhelming. And you see, like, why destroy myself when I see others who are ignoring it and they remain unscarred? Why would I open my heart to that, to others' suffering, and feel that, or feel the sting of the reality of my own mortality? Why would I subject myself to that when others who aren't are getting an advantage over me? Well, are they? This whole operation of being biological means getting cut and healing, getting breaking down and healing until one last time you don't. That's it. And that goes for your emotions too. You know, there's ways of repairing your heart that involve all of us putting up the barn together and being there and help you rebuild. So can we please, all of us, friend communities and any kind of smaller group, support one another, let our hearts rip open together. I'd like to let it break. I let mine break. Because I know it's like those superheroes. You've seen the superheroes that it isn't a painless unbreakableness or immortality. They still feel it. They just trust the rejuvenation. And that, I think I've had to do that with my heart. I've had to realize I have to trust that I can, rebuild. Those tornadoes hit things in real life and in your psyche. And in your worldview, your worlds can be shattered by truth and everything. Isn't this funny? No, I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness, to tell a joke. I heard one on Hogan's Heroes. Let's see. I'm going to have to. Oh, I got, this is Hogan's Heroes. Hogan told this joke, and it's a Ike and Mike or something. He said, I got shoes that are so tight, I'm going to have to wear them for 2 weeks before I can put them on. Before I can even put them on. Okay. Pretend I didn't say it. I'm going to try it again. And this time, I bought shoes that were so tight, I'm going to have to wear them for 2 weeks before I can even put them on. Like that. That would be take two. Do you want me to do another take with different emphasis? No, we're good. All right, thank you.
Hogan's Heroes. Real one. Let's see. What is it? Real one, dialogue one, or something. Real one, real two, dialogue two. R2-D2. What's that from? R2-D2. Richard Portman yelled that. That was his code. He was a re-recordist. Very famous. Academy Award winning. Are you interested in film re-recording? Oh, so interesting. That's something I wish I did. I can do that. You can do that on radio, Hardy. I know, I mixed the song together. There's no picture, though, so you don't know whether I've done a good job or not. But I put the theme song in there and some crows and dialogue mixed just right. I'll be nice. Oh, I wish I was a film re-recordist working in the 1970s. I would put some sound. I could go back in time and add lots of, I'd put some like David Lynch stuff in to earlier films and then go forward in time and accuse him of having stolen it. That's a lot just to play a joke. It's It's not a funny joke either. That's the thing, practical jokes. Practical jokes are not funny. They're not, that's to distinguish them from funny jokes. There's funny jokes and there's practical jokes, which are not funny. So scaring somebody to death or, you know, pretending, I don't know, what all kinds of practical jokes. You killed somebody. I did. Oh, no. No, I'm just kidding. Things like that. I don't know. To whom is it funny? Am I funny to you? Am I a joke? I'm a person. I'm not asking for any sympathy. I think if you're on the if somebody hears you, if a stranger hears you or sees you, then it's open season. You shouldn't demand any respect or, right? No, that doesn't seem right. I don't know. I don't know what the rules are. I'm not sure. I'm not, say, so are you on media? I'm not, though. I don't think, WFMU does not count, does it? I mean, have you ever gone down? Have you ever talked to any of us or anything? You say, oh, that's the media. I don't know. I don't think, we don't all go to a lot of meetings. I've been invited to not one, the media meetings. I don't feel like we're in any stream, Maine or otherwise. It's not, more like a puddle or something like that. It's a puddle. It's not a stream. And in the puddle is just little things floating around, a little life. There's tadpoles and there's all kinds of, what do you call the very small things? I guess there's some tardigrades. Those are the ones that have been there forever. And they won't leave. They're sort of immortal. Are you talking about the puddle or FMU? I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. I don't know. Things can't be compared as well as you think they can. Poetry has taught us that. You know, I compare thee to a to Summer's Eve or something. Okay, how's that? You're like Summer's Eve. Do you realize what you're saying? I don't know, do I? So, again, I'm demonstrating confusing language. I'm not trying to be obtuse. Again, like Gaga says, I came that way. You know, if I'm confusing to myself, why would I not be confusing to you? If I'm a mystery to myself, why would I not be an open book to you? Because that just follows. I've been watching a lot of a certain nostalgia TV channel, and Jimmy Walker's been on doing advertisements again for Medicare supplements or something. And this time he's saying the word money in a really weird way. And I don't know what it does. I don't know whether they worked that out ahead of time. And if you say money like this, Hardy's going to, his nervous system's going to react. I don't know what's going on there. I pay attention. That's the subtle communication. How do they do that? And that's what I'm telling you, advertising. I'm scared of it. Because I feel like they get reactions out of me against my will. And then I think, do I have will or am I just one big triggered lab rat? And if I am a lab rat, I'm going to enjoy this cigarette. And maybe I'm being set up, but who knows? Maybe I get the last laugh, right? Maybe these are cigarette company scientists and they will lie about the effects of this on me and I'll be all right. We'll create a different reality. Again, I'm a lab rat, so I'm not thinking the way that you're thinking. I just want to get to that. What button do I press to get a seed? It's sort of how Hardy White thinks. So I guess if that makes me a lab rat or makes me not in control of my will, so be it. I know that you think some of us do have free will and some don't. And maybe you think everybody does, or maybe you think no one does, or maybe you think rightly that, what a meaningless phrase. Yes, isn't it? It's, first of all, it seems redundant. You know, will or not, like, oh, there's will, but then there's free will. Okay, that's interesting. Willie, free willie. Okay. Flammable. Inflammable. Oh, I see what you're doing. I forgot what we were talking about. I did too. That's good. I'm glad both of us, both myself and the announcer, are baffled. I hope that you're baffled too. And oh my goodness. I'm not going to pretend that I could speak to everybody. I'm as naive as a child. And I am. I'm like a little, my experience is really limited. I haven't left. Now, granted, I've lived in the same apartment in all my life, and I've never been out of it or seen the outside world. But I still feel like through this children's encyclopedia set I have from the 70s and everything, that I see the world clearly. And I got to say that if I was talking to everybody, I would appeal to your heart and say, please, if there's anything in you that ever triggers that feeling of tenderness or patience or something, whether it's children or an animal or anything like that, a lizard, your iguana, if anything makes you feel that way, could you please try to expand it? Could you try to bring it out and to use it to give structure to your patience, so you have a reason to be patient and to be tolerant and to love through adversity. And the foundation of that can be this knowledge of the ultimate helplessness of all creatures and the fact that we all feel pain and we all suffer and that it isn't just you. And it's really, really frustrating how it manifests in others sometimes. And it's very difficult to not make it worse. But I try to just not, if I can just not make it worse. I can't guarantee that I don't react to things. Oh, I wish my heart was stronger and purer. Maybe you can help me. Maybe you help me. I'll help you with something. And then you help me with my math. And I will show you how to be disruptive in class. Deal? Okay, hang on a minute. You help me with math, and I will give you, what's the going rate? I'd like 20 an hour. 20 an hour? I don't even care that much about math. No, forget it. I'll look and see what else I have to offer. Y'all have badminton? I have badminton. We got badminton. All right, I'll think of something. You math, and what am I known for? Is there something I can make or something? Does my family do something? Is there something I can access to? Do you like art? Do you like, I could figure out, maybe I could steal something. Where would you steal something from? I'd have to go to some museums. You got to balance things out, you know. You'd say, like, how much security, access, risk, and who's going to want it, you know, because once the provenance has been disturbed, work of art can be, worthless because you can't get rid of it. These are things that art thieves know. If I took something that was intrinsically pleasing or interesting or complex, I could sell it. I could sell it probably abroad, depending on what it was. These are some suggestions. So, but it's very difficult these days. Being an art thief in this world is just, it's nearly impossible. Unless you just want to have something and know you have it. And I go, I know I have this stolen Picasso and it's in a vault. I look at it alone and blah, blah, blah. I guess that's a thing. I think that only happens in the movies. But more than likely, like, oh, I stole some, you know, sketches from a gallery, and I'm waiting for the people to forget about them. What are you talking about? I'm talking about art theft. Isn't that what you tuned in for? Isn't that why you're on this station? This is the art theft station. If you don't want to listen, I assure you won't be implicated in anything. Should there be an art theft in your area, you're not going to get in trouble for listening to this, the Art Thievery Channel. I'm your host. False name. False Falls Nama is my name. No, I'm Hardy White. I can't lie to you. I'm Hardy White. That's who I am. And I hope that you are whoever you want to be. You tell me who you are, and that's what I'll call you. Because you know you. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you who to be or what. My gosh, I could get it completely wrong. Imagine if you were trying to be somebody I wanted you to be instead of who you were. Oh, get exhausting, wouldn't it? You could fake it for a while. I've seen these sitcoms, you know, that they, oh, I can't go over there. They think I'm a baron, so I have to dress up as a baron every time I go over there. Oh, well, just keep up the charade. You know, eventually you get exhausted and you go, I don't care if they kick me out of the country club. I'm going to let them know that I'm not a baron. I'd rather be myself, and I'd rather be accepted or rejected for who I... No, I don't want to be rejected at all, I guess, is what I'm saying. Listen, I'm going to go hide. Goodbye. I'm sure you've left parties like that. Have you ever been at a party and you think it's going well, and then you think maybe it's not going well, and then you think, oh, man, I should cut my losses and just go. I think I'll just leave and try not to worry about whether I made a fool of myself. And the reason is because it's really hard to be around others. We feel judged sometimes, or we've got to, you know, oh, they're going to think I'm a loser, or I'm not interesting and everything, because we're all different. We all like to talk about different things. And the fact is that people do judge and call each other all sorts of names and everything, and no wonder. But listen to how much suffering that brings. I'm with all sorts of people. It takes loads for me to fully reject somebody. And I don't know. I've got the shit, like, it's like I got the love boat idea of it. Like, you know, at the end of the day, I love saying that, it's a ship. So there is no getting away from anybody, really. You sort of have to confront everything. You have to deal with them. You have to face them. You have to take it into account or change them or whatever, but they're not going anywhere. They're on the ship. Can't just toss them over the side. I've tried that, just tossed everybody over the side. All of a sudden, I'm alone on the ship with my albatross, right? It's a scary ghost ship, and I'm the Ancient Mariner. Wait, where are you going? I haven't finished my story. Oh, I grip your wrist. I am very blessed if you have ever wished me well or been kind to me. It's extra because I feel, I'm not going to lie, and maybe everybody does, I feel very vulnerable sometimes. On the radio, I don't know who's hearing me and cursing me, you know, what. So every time, it's like being in the hospital. You say, oh, they were so nice to me. Because when you feel bad or feel vulnerable, you know, that kindness is amplified. And you think, oh, I can't believe I ever took it for granted that somebody would, you know, bring me ice chips or whatever. It just seems huge given my need. So if a need is filled, oh, it can seem small to you who's filling it. It seems huge to somebody who needs it filled. And so, fill yourself up here free. Something. Oyster crackers. Which are a feast if you're hungry. So I just had a gourmet meal. I don't need your oyster crackers. Yeah, but somebody's hungry, man. Oyster crackers. I could eat a whole bag. So, there you go.
Well, they're not very nutritious.
It's miracle nutrition. Talking about our souls, kind of, whatever that is, our sense of self, that it needs nourishment. It needs to be fed all the time, or it feels lonely. We need to feed one another. And I hope I've done that for you. And I've done that on WFMU. East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York. Woo! Or online at WFMU.org. worldwide. I always say that to you. It is. It's everywhere. That's what you're listening to. I hope you heard that.
Don't mean to be frivolous in the official ID. Well, I'm blessed, and I will see you again next week.
I'm standing.
Name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twins 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 name was Ebony. Twins name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins name was Ebony.
O41218_04-1218_087-1 In a fit of aesthetic political rage, Human Goldberg ate 2 meat pockets for lunch strength, practiced what he preached, and led a Nat Turner-style revolt from south up north to install black bourgeoisie government, later to be bastardized in the public imaginary through Birth of a Nation parody, a classic film that need not be seen by anyone but film students, and not even film students, cuz, if they try to replicate the magic therein, they'd rightly be lynched. Though, if history is any guide, no one would be held accountable for their gang-stalking and murder, even as their bodies gently sway in the breeze from the trees, perfumed by the smoke of the barbecue cornbread, muskrat, oyster feet. How do you change your diet once you've convinced yourself you're Cronenberg and have developed an appetite for your own children? Historically, you give in to the beat and dance over a misshapen flavor, almost equal time umami and sweet. I don't have stairs, though, so I'll have to eyeball it like gentlefolk of the global south in a tactile sensation closer to something like embodying submission to knowing. Unlock this code and tell me who I be. I'll give you a clue. Conestoga Wagon RV Club. Everything that rhymes is true. Sea Wagon. Wooden wheels of recreation turning what is to something new. Death Drive Renaissance, bound to super-saturated piss-yellow umber waves. Sky Blue Eye, open and patrolling, pastoral suburban plains till feigned untamed, headbutts Pocahontas where the earth squares off and she falls away.
Hi, this is Bailey, and you're listening to Mahogany on W.